Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
And welcome into Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here for the next hour as we break down the Nashville Predators at the quarter pole of the season. They are 20 games into this, sitting at 11-9-1. And joining me for this next hour of Preds Talk is Robbie Stanley of Robbie and Rex Road and thegamenashville.com. Robbie, how are we doing on this Monday evening?
I'm doing wonderful, Porth. How are you?
I am doing just fine. I hope you had a great holiday weekend.
It was awesome. I ate a lot of food. Good stuff.
All right. So last week I had Adam Fingan on the show, and we both agreed that last week was a pretty good litmus test for this Nashville Predators club, where on Monday and Friday they played the Ducks and the Devils at home, two upstart teams that are probably exceeding expectations this season. The Predators won both of those games. On Wednesday and Saturday, they hosted Vegas on Wednesday. Saturday, they visited Colorado. They lost both of those games and lost both of them pretty handily. So as we sit here, Robbie, we're 21 games into this season for the Nashville Predators. What is this team?
You know, I think they're right on the edge of what we thought they would be. I think they're going to be good enough to hang around and to really be in the thick of things when it comes to a playoff spot conversation. I don't know that their ceiling is much higher than that. And I think we've started to see that a little bit over the course of the last couple of weeks. You mentioned this past week, you know, the Vegas and Colorado games, I think went about exactly as you thought they would have before the season began. I know Vegas and Colorado, they've gotten off to some slow starts this year. Those two teams are still loaded. They've got a lot of firepower. I think we saw it. I mean, the Vegas game, I think a lot of what we saw in the Vegas game was the Predators couldn't execute for anything in that game. And Vegas deserves some credit for that. But, I mean, you still look at their lineup that night. They had some key guys out. And the Predators had some open passes they just missed. I mean, they had a couple of chances in tight that they just hit the post on one of them.
They had a couple turnovers. Couple turnovers ended up in the back of their own net.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Carrier had a brutal one. That ended up in a goal in their net. So,
and Yossi.
Yeah, I mean, it was not a good night from a puck management standpoint against Vegas. Colorado, look, I give them a little bit of a pass in that game. It's tough to play back-to-back regardless. It's even tougher to play back-to-back when you're at home, you're flying across the country, and you got to play in that altitude on the second half of back-to-back against that team. Yeah. So, look, I know they got shellacked against Colorado. I don't put a ton of stock into that one, but I think they're right where we thought they would be in terms of they're below the playoff line at the moment. They're right there on the thick of things. I still think largely this year they've played pretty well for the most part. I think there's a ceiling to what this team can be in terms of the offensive consistency that they bring to the table. And I know Matt Duchene's been awesome, and I'm sure we'll talk about him more in depth here in a few minutes. But it's just one of those things where unless your power play is rolling on a nightly basis, and there have been times this year when it has been, there have been times lately where it's looked just a little bit off, it's going to be tough to hang in there 5-on-5 with the offense that this team brings to the table. So, you know, I still think they're in a decent spot. They're at 23 points right now. They're right there on the edge of things in terms of the playoff picture. You're just going to have – this team is not going to be able to afford too many of the nights where you're just not executing and you're not firing on all cylinders. I think it's going to take them bringing their identity to the table on a nightly basis and letting the chips fall where they may – when it comes to that regard. If they can do that, I think they can get in there in the playoff mix. If they can't, it's going to be an uphill climb.
So a couple weeks ago on the show, Chase McCabe and I talked about when is this fan base going to start buying in to what they're watching? And that was coming off a third consecutive victory after they had beaten the Arizona Coyotes and sitting there at 9-5-1 after a really good stretch. Ever since then, they've lost 4 of 6. And I look at the totality of November and look at, all right, how did they perform against the elite teams? And when you look at FanDuel Sportsbook, you look at Colorado as the Stanley Cup betting favorite at 6-1. Vegas is fourth at 10-1. Edmonton and Toronto are tied for fifth at 14-1. And at Edmonton, they got housed. At Toronto, the score was 3-0. It was 1-0 for most of the night. They couldn't generate much of anything that night. UC Saros kept them in that game. As we mentioned, Wednesday was kind of ugly against Vegas. And then Saturday, they were completely outmatched for a myriad of different reasons, but they were completely outmatched by the Colorado Avalanche. And that is something that I have really paid close attention to with this team is they can beat teams that they are as good as or better than, but how do they compare? How do they compete against the upper echelon teams? Can they go toe-to-toe with Colorado, Vegas, Toronto, Edmonton, Carolina, Tampa, teams that they'll face later on in the season? And I haven't quite seen that yet from this team, which goes back to your point of there is a ceiling for this club, and it's not a high ceiling. They're probably a playoff bubble team. Outside of that, I don't know how much they could really do if they were to make the playoffs in May.
Well, it's in order for them to compete with the top teams, it's going to take what we saw in the second half of last year, and that is largely superhuman performances from UC Saros. And look, they've gotten a few of those this year. You mentioned the Toronto game. He was awesome in that game. I mean, UC Saros was sensational. I still think even in the Vegas game, as sloppy as it was, and you know the final score ended up being what it was, I still think he made a couple of saves in that game, which were awesome. I mean, he was just phenomenal. So that's the number one formula. You've got to have UC Saros being top-level UC Saros to hang around in these games. Largely, he has been so far this year, so you feel good about that as you move forward. But to your point, like even if you get the best goaltending you can possibly get, you still got to be able to generate something. And the Toronto games, I think is a good example. You know, Forsberg scored twice against Vegas, really three times with one taken off the board.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really felt like they were all that dangerous offensively. It was a lot of one-and-dones. There wasn't much sustained zone time. You know, on the rush, they didn't really generate much. I mean, that goes back to what I was saying, 5-on-5. I think there's a limit to what this team is offensively. And that you can't be so inconsistent in that area and compete on a regular basis with these upper echelon teams. I mean, we know this. When you're playing Carolinas and Tampa Bays and Colorado's Vegas's of the world, they can change the game in a moment because of the players that they have and the touch that they have scoring. And you know, whether it's on the rush, 5-on-5, setting up the zone, whatever it is, you know, they've got the players to do that. This team largely doesn't. And remember, we're having a conversation about not being elite or not being, you know, quite consistent enough offensively right now with Johansson and Duchesne playing well. So just imagine if they weren't, what the conversation we'd be having. So from that standpoint, it's just hard to imagine the ceiling on this team being much greater than the playoff bubble team.
Well, and when you look at this week as an example as well, Tuesday, home against Columbus, Saturday, home against Montreal, I would expect the Predators to play well in those games and probably win both of those games at Bridgestone Arena. But Thursday against Boston, you know, I'll go back to the Stanley Cup odds on FanDuel. Boston is sitting there in eighth at 16-1. How do they look against the Bruins on Thursday night? Are they good enough to beat the Bruins on home ice? Can they go to New York next week and beat the Rangers? The Rangers look like a really good team. They play Colorado again in December. They go to Carolina. They go to Florida. Those are the games where I really want to see what this Predators team can do, because they've already proven that they can beat average to below average teams. And that's what Columbus and Montreal are. So, you know, it's important to win those games to stay in the mix for the postseason. But when looking at the potential for this club when it comes to playoff time, if they were to make the playoffs, those are the games that particularly I'm watching closely to see how they match up.
Well, particularly now, too, because, I mean, outside of Forsberg's 9-game stint, you've been relatively healthy so far, too. So we know from watching hockey long enough, that's not always going to continue. Like, you're going to run into some injury problems coming up down the stretch as you get into the meat of the season. So, you know, as you're healthy, you've got to start to build that chemistry and take care of the opponents that are in front of you. And look, it's going to take a couple of different times this year you to go on a run and on a stretch like you did a few weeks ago when you were 7-1-1 or 8-1-1, whatever they went during that stretch when you're collecting points on basically a nightly basis. Like, I don't know that this team is good enough throughout the course of the regular season to avoid, you know, the 3 or 4 game losing streaks that pop up. I think you're going to see a couple of those this year. You have to counteract those with some big winning streaks, and they've had one so far. You got to find a way to do that. And to your point, you know, you've got Boston coming in on Thursday. You got to win that game. You've also let Montreal come up and sneak up and get you once this year too, and you can't let that happen again. Like, you've got to take care of those games as well, especially on home ice. And you know, I think largely on home ice so far this year, they've been okay. Like, you know, the Arizona game, it's Arizona. They're awful. I don't think New Jersey's all that great either. So you're taking care of business against those teams. I still think there's another level that they need to get to on home ice. I think they've largely played better on the road this year than they have at home.
Really?
I do.
I don't know if I would agree with that.
Just based on the eye test.
Yeah.
Now, remember,
I hear you.
Part of that home schedule is the first 4 games where they couldn't hit the broad side of the barn.
Yeah. I mean, it took a few weeks for this team to get going. I mean, 2 of the more impressive wins of this season have been on the road, where they, in that back-to-back at Dallas, 8 at St. Louis, won both of those games. I kind of think they've been, personally, I think they've been the same at home versus on the road. And if there's another gear for this club, we're going to need to see it here in the next month or so for them to, you know, continue to be in this playoff mix, because there are teams in the Central Division. It's a loaded division.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, St. Louis has been a little up and down, but they started hot. Minnesota, Winnipeg, Colorado, Dallas is starting to come on. I mean, those are 5 teams, 5 playoff caliber teams that you're going to have to stay neck and neck with.
You can put Arizona in that mix?
Sans Colorado? No.
Dang.
Heck no. But, I mean, Chicago, ever since they fired their coach that was completely unqualified to be an NHL head coach, Chicago has been playing pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, they've dug themselves a hole that most teams can't get out of. But I don't think you can look at games on the schedule against the Blackhawks and say, oh, well, that's a victory, because they're playing a lot better, and the Preds lost to them for the Blackhawks' first win of the year. So, I don't know. I think, in totality, for this team, 23 points in 21 games is about what you would expect for this team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's about an 85 to 87-point pace, and their over-under before the season was 83.5.
Yeah. No, I think they're right on line of where most people thought they would be. Now, the big problem as you move forward here is what you just brought up, and that is the division that they're in. And I guess you could look at it a couple of different ways. Like, I think when everything's said and done, they're going to be 5 playoff teams from the Central and the Western Conference. Anaheim's been a nice start. I don't really buy that Anaheim's all that good, and I think they're going to fade as the season goes on. I think Vegas is going to continue to get better and better. I think Colorado will continue to get better and better.
Yep.
So you've got Minnesota, St. Louis, Winnipeg, Colorado, Dallas, as you mentioned. I think they're going to be 5 teams that come out of the playoffs from the Central Division. Can you find a way to be one of those teams? And you can look at it a couple of different ways. Like, you're playing those teams a lot, so you've got your chance to take them down right there as well. But also, it'd be not kind of nice to be in the Pacific Division, playing against some of those weaker teams and just piling up points that way. So it's kind of luck of the draw on the schedule when it comes to what exactly that's going to mean for the Predators. But the division, pretty good so far for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, the Pacific Division, I would say the 3 teams out of that division are already, I won't say locked up, but it looks pretty clear that the Golden Knights, the Oilers, and the Flames will be the 3 teams out of the Pacific.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, I think those are 3 legitimate good teams. And I know Edmonton's had their struggles.
Would you throw Calgary in there?
I think Calgary's pretty good. The one question I have with them, as always, is their goaltending. But I think
Markstrom's been good.
He's been great. I still wonder how long does that last. But
sure,
they look pretty good.
Daryl Sutter still
Mr. Personality, getting after it out there. Come on.
I'm sure you, Robbie Stanley, are really looking forward to the Calgary Flames coming into town in December.
Can't wait to talk to Daryl Sutter, as every media member says.
It would be like talking to a brick wall.
Yes, it would.
He's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. The Preds back at it tomorrow night against the Columbus Blue Jackets, with pregame starting at 6, puck drop at 7. Right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, Adam Fingen had an interesting column on The Athletic pertaining to the future of Philip Forsberg. Do we agree or disagree with Fingen's take? We'll get to that on the other side. Again, he's Robbie Stanley. I'm Ryan Porth, and you are listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders rolls right along here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Preds Insiders brought to you every week by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit kellyerice.com. Ryan Porth here in studio this evening alongside Robbie Stanley of Robbie and Rex Road. And you can find some of his work at thegamenashville.com as well. Robbie, the last time I had you on a few weeks ago, we talked about the future of Philip Forsberg immediately after he went down with an upper body injury.
Yep.
That forced him to miss 9 games. He returned on Wednesday night. You mentioned last segment that he scored a couple of goals in that game. And a lot has been made about the future of Philip Forsberg, especially ever since Matthias Ekholm signed his contract extension back earlier this season. And Adam Fingen on Friday had an interesting column on the future of Philip Forsberg, and Adam details why he would not re-sign Philip Forsberg for the long term, despite what Forsberg has meant to this Predators franchise. So I'll start with you, Robbie. Do you agree with Adam Fingen's take that the Predators should steer clear from signing Philip Forsberg and, to Adam's point, essentially adding another large contract to the books?
I don't agree with it from the standpoint of that's just the conversation's over and that is what it is, and you need to just start thinking about where you're going to trade him. I still think if I'm David Poile, I'm trying everything I can do to get a reasonable deal done. Now, look. You know, I'm not in the negotiation room. I don't know exactly what the conversations have looked like. It'd be difficult for me to imagine Forsberg's side of things not asking for the moon at this point, just based on his positioning and of his contract, the bargaining power that he has, knowing that he could be a free agent at the end of this season. So it may just eventually be as simple if you're David Poile as he's asking for too much, we're not going that high, and we're going to have to trade him. And look, I think that's a very likely scenario that could end up happening with Philip Forsberg. I still believe that you are a better team with Philip Forsberg than you are without Philip Forsberg. And, you know, we had some of that while he was out and the Predators were winning games of, oh, well, I guess they don't need Forsberg all that much. I give to you Wednesday night when he comes back in, scores 2 goals, really scored 3 goals. I thought it was a really ticky-tack goaltender interference call that took the hat trick away.
Yeah.
But regardless of the situation, he comes back in, makes an immediate impact. I think he's a really good player. I will say, from the time we've had the conversation 3 weeks ago here on this show to now, it's not gotten much easier for me in terms of figuring out exactly what that means of his dollar value. And I think that's really the tough part of this, too. Like, I absolutely understand if you're David Poile and the Predators looking around and saying, there's no way in the world I'm paying him $7.5 million a year for 8 years to come play for this hockey team. I totally get that. I understand the thought process of Predators fans who say, you have got to get out of the business of signing long-term deals. However, like, you can't operate that way forever. Like, there's eventually going to have to be a point where you sign players to long-term deals. Otherwise, you're just going to keep losing out on players. Like, it is what it is in terms of negotiation. So the question is Philip Forsberg that guy? I'd be hesitant with 8 years. I think he's going to be able to get 7 on the open market. Remember, he cannot get 8 on the open market based on the way that free agency now works in, under the CBA. So he will be eligible for 7. I think somebody will give him 7. My price, it's still around the 7.25 range at max for Philip Forsberg. And if it gets over than that, I just don't know how you do it if you're the Predators at this point.
Philip Forsberg is an interesting case when it comes to the open market discussion because he hasn't been a 30-goal scorer since the 2016-17 season, either because of shortened seasons or because of injuries. And he's in the middle of his prime. He's 27 now, you know, with whichever team he signs for, whether it's the Nashville Predators or a new team in the offseason,
yep.
He'll be heading into the age 28 season because he turns 28 in August. But I don't know if there will be a team out there that will be willing to give Forsberg 7 years. Are you like 100% sold that would be the case?
I'm not 100%. I'd put it about 95.
Really?
It's free agency. Somebody's going to give him money in term.
7 years is a long time, though, with someone who has an injury history.
Yeah.
We discussed this the last time you were on, that it's not this major injury history where he's missing 20, 30 games at a time.
Right.
He's missing 2 to 3 weeks at a time when he's out. But I have to think there are going to be other teams, including maybe even the Predators, that look at that injury history and say, okay, at what point do all the little injuries add up to one big one
yeah.
that could cost him a larger chunk of a season? That, to me, would keep me from going above $7 million or 5 years with Philip Forsberg. If it's more than 5 years or if it's more than $7 million, I'm walking away. And I'm making that determination probably in January before the Olympic break that may not be an Olympic break, depending on how everything is going overseas. There's been a lot of chatter about that here lately, but I don't think this is a player that you can just ride this out and see what happens in June or July with negotiations. You've got to make a determination before the calendar turns to February of whether or not this guy is going to be here long term. And if he's not, and this team is still treading water or just on the fringe of the playoff picture, I don't know if you can really afford to do what you did last season and push your chips in to the middle of the table for a playoff run.
Well, that's the thing. Like, that's what makes this decision tougher, because I don't know this. A lot of things can happen. But my guess is when we look at, you know, March the 7th, with the deadline being March 21st this year, I imagine the standings are going to look pretty similar to what they look like right now in terms of where the Predators are. They might be up a spot or two. They might be down a spot or two. But my guess is they're still probably going to be right in the thick of it in terms of being in the playoff race and having a chance to make the playoffs. Obviously, if you trade Philip Forsberg away at that point, your chances of making the playoff go down pretty dramatically based on how good he is, how important he is to your team. But I also agree with you. Like, you cannot just roll the dice with him and lose him for nothing this offseason. I think he could get a pretty big return. I think, obviously, if you know that you're going to lose him and that you can't re-sign him, you've got to get something for him. Like, the idea of him just walking out the door after a first-round playoff exit this year, to me, that's borderline fireable if you let that happen. So you cannot do that if you're the Predators. So I wouldn't expect them to do that. I wouldn't expect them to let that happen. But that's also going to be a pretty tough pill to swallow for that team if they're right there in the thick of a playoff race and all of a sudden David Poile says, all right, guys, sorry, but Philip Forsberg's gone. We just traded him to Calgary or wherever they get rid of him. So it's a tough spot to be in if you're David Poile and the Predators.
And we all know David Poile has had a hard time finding guys like Philip Forsberg.
Yeah.
Which I think at some point will factor into this equation.
Yeah.
Whether that's the right call or not, Philip Forsberg is the most dynamic forward that this team has had in his prime.
Yeah.
Paul Kariya was great for two seasons, but Philip Forsberg has been somebody that they have groomed ever since they acquired him as a prospect from the Capitals. And I mean, he's been a key linchpin up front for this club since 2014. I mean, that's a long time for a forward in this franchise to be a linchpin as a key goal scorer and a key component, and that's what Philip Forsberg has been. So that kind of goes to what you're saying of that would be a tough pill to swallow. But I don't know if you can meet what Forsberg's demands likely will be, and by all accounts, he might be looking for something in the range of Johansson and Duchesne. I don't think you can do that. I just don't.
So you've mentioned you're not going over 5 years and you're not going over $7 million. I think that's a popular take among Predators fans. What do you think David Poile's limit is? That's the bigger question.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think David Poile is comfortable giving Philip Forsberg?
I don't think David Poile would do 8. I just don't. I think I understand why Forsberg would compare himself to Johansson and Duchesne, and particularly because he's on the same team as them. But what GMs pay centers is typically more than what GMs pay wingers.
Correct.
So I think you have to have that in mind.
Yeah.
I think if it's north of 7.5, I think David Poile is going to have a hard time biting the bullet on that contract. I also think if it's more than 6 years, I think David Poile should have a hard time agreeing to something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Like, I just don't see that there's any way Philip Forsberg is signing a contract for less than 7 years. I cannot see it happening, because I think he knows if he gets to the open market, somebody's going to give it to him. So, like, if that's your stance, if you're David Poile, of I'm not going over 6 years and I'm not approaching $8 million, then you probably better get ready to trade him, because I don't anticipate Forsberg signing for less than that.
I'm going to make a bold prediction on November 29th that if Philip Forsberg hits the market, he's not getting 7 years.
Okay. I like that.
I'm going to agree to disagree, or I'm just going to flat out disagree with the whole 7 years on the open market thing.
I will make the prediction that he will get 7 years.
Okay. Because teams are awfully hesitant now compared to pre-COVID with the salary cap.
Sure.
And the fact that it's a flat cap. And this is a player that has not scored 30 goals since the 2016-17 season.
Yep.
And he has not played a full season in any of the last 5 years. And we can already count this season as one that he does not play the full 82.
Yeah.
Or the full, you know, whatever shortened season there has been.
So, I hear you.
He is an interesting case for the open market, because we all know the talent is there. He is proven, but he's not proven at a high, high level when it comes to the back of a hockey card.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 230 goal seasons.
Yeah. Now, wouldn't it be interesting to see what he looks like playing with a Sasha Barkov, or I'm not even going to say Connor McDavid, because I think I could score 25 goals playing with Connor McDavid.
He might score 55.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I think it's a little bit different with that. And, you know, the salary cap's an important thing to bring up, because there's not a ton of teams in great position there. But you know what I'm saying. Like, if he's playing with an elite-level center, what could those numbers look like? Because I can see, if I'm Philip Forsberg's representative, saying, well, yeah, he's playing with Johansson and Duchesne. They've been largely underperforming the last couple of years. What do you expect? Like, I could see I think interesting is the right word. He's a real interesting case as to what a contract's going to look like in today's NHL.
Well, another team can flip that around and say, well, why does he need an elite center to put up big numbers?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, why would I give this player 7 years, $8 million per, when he has an injury history? And again, it's not like he's coming off back-to-back 30-goal seasons coming into this year, which is his contract year. I mean, we've been waiting for this next step for Philip Forsberg that just, it never happened. And it may never happen in a Nashville Predators uniform.
What's really going to make this more complicated is when, like, in the next month, he goes through one of those Philip Forsberg hot streaks and he's scoring left and right.
Yeah.
And that's going to make things pretty interesting, too.
Like 5 years ago when he had back-to-back hat tricks?
Yeah. He can do it. It's been a while, but he can do it.
Well, hopefully for David Poile's sake, that happens, like, the night before.
Right.
The March 7th or March
21st.
Trade deadline.
Be pretty good stuff. Talk about negotiating power.
It is a fascinating case with Philip Forsberg, and something that I know on this show we are going to be debating all season long until there's any sort of resolution to the Forsberg conundrum.
Conundrum. That's a good word.
He's Robbie Stanley. You can hear good words on Robbie and Rex Road every weekday morning from 6 to 10 a.m., including Cheeks. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders. On the other side, we're going to do a little buy or sell exercise as the Nashville Predators are one quarter of the way through this regular season. That's next on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth joined by Robbie Stanley this evening of Robbie and Rex Road and TheGameNashville.com. The Preds are 21 games through the season, sitting at 11-9-1 through those 21 games. They will play their 22nd game of the season tomorrow night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Pre-game coverage starting at 6 p.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Some Franklin High School math right there for you. 21 plus 1 is 22.
That's right, and my Franklin High School math was wrong earlier in the show. I said the Preds were on an 85-87-point pace. They're actually on an 89-point pace.
Don't be selling them short.
So the teachers at Franklin High School did not do a good enough job in math class teaching me how to at the top of my head.
Project forward.
Yeah. So there's that. All right, so we are a quarter of the way through this Nashville Predators regular season, and Robbie, I want to do a buy or sell exercise with you.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So piggybacking off the conversation that we just had on Philip Forsberg, buy or sell that Philip Forsberg is on the Nashville Predators roster come March 22nd?
I will sell. I don't believe that he's going to be on the roster. I think it's going to be a tough negotiation. I think that Philip Forsberg knows he's got a lot of bargaining power when it comes to getting to the open market. And I think this time around, David Poile knows that he can't just risk Philip Forsberg walking out the door for nothing. So I will sell that he will be on this roster come March 22nd. I believe he will be traded. I think it's going to be tough. I think they're going to do everything they can do to try and avoid the situation. But I think at the end of the day, Philip Forsberg will not have a contract in place.
You know, one other thing that I didn't mention last segment that did come to mind here recently is that we have not heard Forsberg come out publicly and say the things that Mattias Ekholm said when there were a lot of rumors about his future.
Yep.
Where Ekholm was adamant about wanting to stay in Nashville, and Forsberg has played his cards close to the vest. I do find that interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I talked to him in training camp, and that was when he made the, you know, I feel like you got to play your contract out comments, which a lot of people took and ran with, and I understand why. It's also, that is a negotiation thing that he's doing there, too.
Sure.
He's not an idiot. He knows that his contract is up. So, look, I believe Philip Forsberg loves Nashville. I believe in a perfect world he'd probably like to stay here, but I also believe he's not going to settle for less than he feels that he's worth. So,
sure.
We see players do that a lot.
That's his
sometimes
right.
It works out. Sometimes it doesn't. We'll see what happens.
That is his right.
It is.
As an NHL player.
It is.
All right, number two on buy or sell. Matt Duchene will break the Predators' single-season goal record, which was set by Victor Arvidsson with 34 goals back in the 18-19 season. Matt Duchene currently has 13 goals in 21 games. Do you buy or sell that?
Oh, man, that one's tough. I will go sell. I think I'm going to say slightly under. I think he gets to 30, 31, somewhere around there. I think the pace he's on right now is going to slow down a little bit. His shooting percentage is still pretty high. So I think that slows down. I think he ends up with 30 or 31, but I don't think he's going to get to 34, 35. So I will sell.
I'm going to buy it.
Okay. Look, he's playing like this, he's going to get 50. So
I mean, a month ago, when he was starting to heat up, I kept saying, I want to see it end of December. And we've seen it all the way through the end of November.
Yep.
Where he has stayed at a really good pace offensively for this team. Again, 13 goals through 21 games for Matt Duchene. I'm doing some Franklin High School math on the fly here, which means he is on a 50-goal pace.
Yeah.
I don't think he scores 50. I doubt he scores 40. I think he breaks the single-season record.
Okay.
And he caps off the ultimate statement season for him, where everybody and their mother was doubting him going into the season after his first couple of seasons in a Preds uniform.
I'll tell you what, not just the goal scoring, but the way he's playing, the confidence, kind of the swagger that he's got right now. He looks pretty good. I mean, there was a game last week. It was against Anaheim, where he didn't score in that game. He had two great looks. He played awfully well in that game. Matt Duchene, even when he's not scoring right now, looks pretty good out there. And to me, that's probably the most encouraging thing. The goals are great, obviously. But when he's not scoring, him still playing really well and looking good, that's pretty encouraging if you're a Predator.
I mean, the dish that he had to Mikael Granlund
is sick.
On Granlund's goal Friday against New Jersey, where he's behind the net and just in one motion goes backhand and puts it right on the tape of Granlund's stick, who puts in the back of the net. I mean, that is what you pay $8 million to a center for.
Yeah. Well, I'd probably leave those two together for the foreseeable future.
Probably.
They look awfully good.
That would be a wise decision, yeah. Coach Stanley.
Thank you.
All right, the number one, or I should say number three item in buy or sell, Ryan Johansson will finish the season with the most goals he has ever scored as a Nashville Predator. Ryan Johansson currently has 6, and the most he has scored with the Nashville Predators in a single season is 15, which he did back in the 17-18 season. Buy or sell?
I buy that. I think he gets 20. I think he gets around 20 goals this year. I like the way he's playing. You know, I talked with him last week, talked to John Hines about him as well, about kind of what the difference is in his game. And so far, and I think there's a lot of validity to this, he's moving his feet. Like, go watch him play. He'll break up a play in the defensive zone. He's immediately just getting down on it, getting to the other end of the ice, you know, finishing plays, not drifting, not trying to slow the game down too much. Look, we know Johansson in the past has been a very deliberate player. He likes to slow the game down. He likes to see what his options are in front of him. And I think there are times where that's really good. I also think when you're 6'4" and 220 pounds of straight muscle, that moving your feet a lot is a good thing, and you're very hard to deal with at that time. So I think he physically has been very difficult to deal with for opposing defenses so far this year. I do think he's been a little bit more aggressive on his shot. I still think there's room for improvement there. I think he needs to shoot the puck even more than he is so far this year. I think that's always going to be something we talk about with Ryan Johansson. But I like how opportunistic he's been. I like that he's looking to shoot. I like the aggressiveness. I say he ends up with 20 this year.
I'm going to buy that he ends with more than 15. I'm not going to approach the 20 number like you have. Perhaps he does reach the 20-goal plateau. I think the most encouraging thing with Ryan Johansson is the fact that he is playing well with a lot of different line mates. Yep. When before this season, you felt like Ryan Johansson was only on his A game with Victor Arvidsson and Philip Forsberg on that line.
Yeah.
So
I do think it's important, though, that eventually you find somebody to play with him.
Sure.
Like, you've got, I think, in a perfect world, you need a winger, whether it be Philip Forsberg or Luke Cunningham, who I think has struggled so far this year, or a Philip Tomasino, to kind of grab those reins and play with him.
I agree. Well, one winger that you did not mention was Elli Tolvanen. He is the subject of the number four item in buy or sell. Buy or sell that Elli Tolvanen, who has one goal right now, will end the season with double-digit goals.
Whew, that's tough. I'll buy it because I think he's also a player that if he gets one to drop, he can get hot and could get on a streak where he puts in a few in a week.
We saw that last March.
Yeah, we did. So I'll buy that he gets the double digits. You know, there are those out there right now that are not all that concerned with the production because of the shots that he's taken and all that stuff. I don't think Elli Tolvanen's been very good. I think he's been invisible way too often this year. So I am very concerned about Elli Tolvanen at this point as to whether or not he's going to develop into the player they need him to be 5-on-5. I will buy very reluctantly that he gets the double digits this year.
Well, we also have to remember with Tolvanen is that the fact that he had a quasi-breakout season last year with 11 goals in 40 games and was a big part of a power play that took off in the second half of last season and was a big part of their success. I mean, he has one goal through 21 games. This is a guy that, because of what happened last year, everyone was starting to get excited about the future when you coupled that with the potential for Philip Tomasino to
the floor is Forsberg.
Yes, exactly, as some people will like to point out. But if you had told me before the season that here on November 29th that Philip Tomasino would have more goals than Elli Tolvanen, I would not have bought that.
No.
I have been pretty disappointed, as you have and others have, that Tolvanen has been largely invisible for most of the season.
Well, keep in mind, he scored the first goal of the year for these guys.
Yeah.
So you're talking about 20 games now that he's off the board. That's concerning. 20 games? That's a long time.
That's more of a cold streak than what we saw from Craig Smith.
Yeah.
When he was a 20-goal scorer.
Yeah.
I mean, Craig Smith was very streaky, but very rarely did he go 20 games without a goal.
Yeah.
And here we are with Tolvanen.
It's a problem.
So, all right, the final thing in buy or sell. One of Roman Josi or Juuse Saros will be a finalist for an end-of-season award. Josi for Norris or Saros for Vezina. Do you buy or sell that?
I buy. I think both of them are going to end up having the numbers to do it. I think, as we found out, a lot of it has to do with team success. Honestly, based on the way it went last year, I don't have a ton of confidence in NHL general managers with the Vezina Trophy in terms of the way they view things. I think it's way too much of a, oh, how's our team doing type thing. I think both of them will have the numbers to do it. I will buy it that Roman Josi is a finalist. I'm not sure about Juuse Saros. Look, if Roman Josi continues to play the way he's played so far, I mean, it's going to be virtually impossible to keep him off of the finalist list. I'm not sure he'll win it, but it will be pretty impossible to keep him off of the finalist list. So I will say that I buy, and I would give Roman Josi a slightly better chance than UC Saros.
I would give Roman Josi a much better chance than UC Saros to qualify or to be a finalist for the Norris Trophy. A, because he's done it, and B, I think his numbers, when voters look at defensemen, yep. Unfortunately, they gravitate to offensive numbers first for a defensive award. And Josi has been at a point-per-game pace for much of this season already. He's been very consistent in the box score. I think he can play better defensively than what he's done here in the last couple of weeks. But I think at the end of the day, Roman Josi will be a finalist for the Norris. I don't think Saros, with how many goalies are playing very well,
yep.
I think Saros would have to go on another run like he did in the second half of last season for him to put himself into that conversation. And he's played very well so far this season. I don't think his numbers necessarily reflect how well he's played. He's got a 2.50 goals against average and a 918 save percentage. I think his play has been better than that, or at least his eye test. I don't think UC Saros ends up in the top five of Vezina voting. That is just my hunch with...
Oh, you're probably right.
I mean, there are so many goaltenders that have been putting up much better numbers than mm-hmm. Saros.
Well, to your point, like, I think there's opportunities for those numbers to get better. But I go back to, it's also kind of a team award. And it probably shouldn't be that way. But a lot of times, your first place goaltender in the Western Conference is a Vezina Trophy finalist. Your first place goaltender in the Eastern Conference is as well. So I think there's more competition there. To your point about Josi, the point per game stuff, you know, if he finishes around 68, 69, 70 points this year, you can go on and book it that he's going to be a finalist.
Well, and I wouldn't be as confident in saying that if Josi hadn't won it
sure.
two seasons ago, but he did. So he's already on the voters' radar.
Oh, yeah.
Saros, and yes, the Vezina is voted on by the general managers, I think is going to have an exceptional last 75% of the season for him to be one of those final three, because there is a lot of stiff competition amongst goaltenders. I mean, Vasilevsky, Igor Shesterkin with the Rangers, Frederik Andersen in Carolina has been very good, Jack Campbell in Toronto has been very good, yeah. Jacob Markstrom in Calgary has been very good. I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out, but, I mean, Connor Hellebuyck is always yeah. in the discussion, so I think it's going to be very difficult for Saros to be amongst those final three.
You could put Matt Duchene and Rocket Richard. Think he's going to win that?
No.
If he stays on this pace, he'll give himself a shot. Although Ovechkin's on pace right now to score 79.
So. I was about to say, between Ovechkin and Draisaitl and Austin Matthews is becoming consistent again when it comes to goal scoring. I mean, that is elite company that Matt Duchene, as well as he's playing, is not going to be in that conversation. He just isn't.
You imagine having this conversation 3 months ago about Matt Duchene?
No. I cannot picture that.
Not many people can.
We were wondering whether or not he would be on the top two lines at this point in the season.
Yeah. No, it's crazy.
And he's been their best offensive player.
By far. It's not been close.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And that's the thing. Like, Matt Duchene's playing well. We're talking about Roman Josi maybe being a Norris Trophy finalist, whether or not UC Saros can be a Vezina Trophy finalist. Can Ryan Johansson get 20 goals? And they're on the playoff bubble. Just kind of shows you where they're at right now.
I know. How would you like to be watching a player that has 40 points through 20 games? I'm sitting here looking at the NHL stats and Leon Draisaitl. I mean, it's like every night is a multi-point night.
Yeah. Maybe something to take a look at on the FanDuel Sportsbook.
Yeah. Probably.
The power play is not fair. Which, by the way, a lot of love for the Preds power play so far this year, too. But I'm so glad to not be having that conversation of,
yeah,
why can't they score on the power play?
I know. Those were the days.
Those were the days.
Those were also much simpler times.
Yes, they were.
In our country. For Robbie Stanley, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
You can catch Robbie's work on Robbie and Rex Road weekday morning, 6 to 10 a.m. and thegamenashville.com. For Robbie Stanley, I'm Ryan Poor. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Preds Insiders. We'll be back with you next Monday at 6 p.m. right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.